Then this is the popular group that juniors play against seniors.
Well, we hope to facilitate those juniors having ratings and then to go into the senior results so that all seniors will have results too. We've been a little careful in the United States because there's a 30-year-old rating system called the NTRP, the National Tennis Rating Program, that they use in the adult leagues. And so they're a little offended that we were coming out and saying that there was something better now. So now we will start to capture the adults because we have so many adult players writing to us and asking to be included in that, in the program. So again, we will have the resources soon to begin collecting those results. So the federations that work with us will get their information much faster. And from a federation point of view, from a player development point of view, we will be able to provide an inventory of every single player in the system at every level, at every age. So when you're trying to think, if you're an administrator trying to think, where do I put my dollars into development, you can see exactly this is the pool of junior 16 and under players we have at these levels. We can design competitions that are absolutely appropriate for them, rather than just putting all 16-year-olds together, hoping we come out a winner.
You have, in the U.S., developed years back, very sophisticated tools for measuring in basketball statistics. Which kind of maybe are the ways you're going? Have you even more ideas of going even further with this?
We have lots of ideas.
Because it's very interesting. It's
absolutely fascinating. More, yeah. Eventually, we hope to rate tournaments to see what level they are. There's no end of ideas, and a lot of the users now are contributing their ideas because, as our founder knows, you often develop a tool and then people help you figure out how to bring more uses to it. So we have a lot on the planning board, but until we can really say that this is the world standard, that we're actually collecting results, all of Denmark's domestic results, all of Norway's domestic results, etc., the system won't be fully operational. There will be some missing pieces with the players who aren't fully rated. So our hope is to establish that and then have a company that will survive, be agile in a tech way now, and have much lower cost to be able to provide associations and federations worldwide with tools far less expensively. Does that help?
Yeah.
Thank you. Good question. Yes?
So your homepage, I'm saying we can add to our own data?
Yes. Let me understand. You can't punch in your data. Yes, we don't share the algorithm because we don't want people trying to game the system. We see enough of that in the tennis world right now with people trying to figure out how do I get soft points. We have coaches in the United States. I don't know if that happens here. We have coaches in the United States that actually make money trying to tell parents how to go find the right points. I have coaches in the United States that told me parents have paid them to figure out how do they get in the top 100 to get into the French Open. That's not a good system. We call a points per round system an undevelopment system. Because what it really does is it teaches people a bad habit, which is to go seek the greatest reward for the lowest risk. That does not make a competitor.
I didn't mean
to suggest you are. If you're not in the system, and most people are surprised if they played any ITF results that they actually are in the system, but you get in the system if you find someone else you do know that does play ITF tournaments before the domestic results get in. You find somebody and say, well, my son or my daughter is pretty close to that player. Then you look up, where does that player stand? And you get a pretty darn good idea pretty quickly. So it's a process. And we'd love to have Denmark fully involved, engaged, and leading the world in best practices. What else? Yes?
Very interesting system. Would that mean that you approach, you skip the normal age group system, so you compete towards someone at the same level?
We're trying not to we're not trying not to. We are not dictating to federations how to run their system. We first approach this as a complementary system against which to measure your efforts. How well are we doing at providing competitive matches? How well are we doing at retaining players in the game? So, what we would like to see down the road is we would like to see entry-level players for juniors so they're playing really in their age groups, not too far away from their age. We don't want to intimidate a 10-year-old by playing with a 43-year-old. That just takes a brain. But when a person gets to 15 in France, that player, if he's very good, is already playing in the men's opens all the time. They may have two national championships a year in the winter and the summer, and they may play to see who's the best junior in France. But the rest of the time, they're just like salmon climbing a ladder to see how good they can get. The junior who's 15, maybe not that good, is competing in open French tournaments under 18. So there's a way to portray it for everybody so that the one thing I didn't talk about is when you integrate the age groups, you can play much closer to home. One French, we have a national coach in the United States, works for the USTA, but was brought up in the French system. He said, I did not travel until I was 16 or 17. I didn't need to. I could still lose to the male players in my region. Now, having said that, there's nothing better than travel as a way for becoming educated about the world, learning to live with people from different backgrounds. Those are sensational. What we're trying to do is not say, don't go travel. We're simply saying that if you can't, or you want to stay in school, you want to do this, there are reasons for staying close to home. We have families literally picking up from Minnesota and moving to Florida, transplanting their whole family to do it. We don't believe that should be necessary. And I don't know how many families can really afford that. So we're losing a lot of families and players from a really good game because of that. Yes?
Does the system separate single and double? Or is it
yes,
single?
It does. Yes. So unlike the ITF rankings, which are a hybrid of singles and doubles, we've decided to make a pure singles rating, so you understand exactly what that is, and now we're developing a doubles rating. We've taken all of last year's thousands of results from college tennis, which is very international, and we started incorporating the doubles results. We're developing a doubles algorithm that will have someone say, if I'm a better doubles player, I would like a coach that I'm talking to know that I'm a better doubles player. And we find that worldwide, many more people play doubles than they do singles. So we think that a system needs to have that as we move forward.
But besides this transparent system, what are the skills that those young players in Denmark should look for when looking for a college in the States? Because I understand that in this way we can see across the world at what level you are in tennis. But what other skills are needed for a college?
Do you mean what other tennis skills do you mean, or academic?
Overall, what are the key points to look for when we're looking for a college?
Great. I somehow skipped over some slides. I'm sorry. academically, would everyone be interested to understand the SATs and the ACTs? They're two uniform tests that people can take. It can be one or the other. It doesn't have to be both. The SAT has three components to it. The ACT is a different system. It's not as widely used in the United States, but you may find that your educational background works better in one than the other. In the United States, people often take this test, one of the tests, multiple times. The SAT will take what is called your super score. So if you get a 600 in math one time, and the next time you take it, you get a 640, but your English, your verbal score goes down the next time, they'll still take the two best scores from those tests. So you really are not hurting yourself, and oftentimes you're proving to the college or the university that I'm a serious student, I'm willing to keep pushing to get those scores. There's also something called an SAT or a subject test. Subject tests are actually more relevant at Harvard. You can take up as many as you want to, but Harvard will look at two of them. That might be in physics, chemistry, math 1 or math 2. There are different ways to show what kind of body of knowledge you've mastered to show, do I belong in that academic setting? And each college will have its own range of academic performance that they're looking for. So the Ivy League is quite high. Harvard's is really high. Practically speaking, I can only help approximately 3 players a year. That doesn't mean I can guarantee that they will get in. It means that if we find people who are academically qualified, having our support will give them a far greater chance of being admitted than the other 40,000 applicants, of which they're going to choose 2,000 people. So it's pretty remarkable. The other thing that parents may not understand is that the Ivy League, which I'm a part, awards financial aid solely on need. So if a family is wealthy, even if their son or their daughter was the highest academic person admitted, they would still have to pay. If someone is the lowest person admitted in the class and their family doesn't have much, they will get almost complete help and a variation in between. So it's a remarkable system. Harvard alumni contribute $160 million a year to make that possible, because the price tag of private education is outrageous now. Everybody knows it, and everybody's trying to make it affordable for upper-class families, middle-class families, and lower-class families. So it's a pretty remarkable system. Yes?
So what I'm hearing you saying about Harvard is that you have to have a perfect academic score and be really good at tennis to get in.
Yes, and Gandhi might have gotten in. Actually, I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm telling you the bad news. The good news is that when people visit, they're amazed that we just have regular guys. They like to pursue something well. Their tennis really does help them. They don't have to be as high an academic level, although they often are. But we try to find people who are not looking for an excuse not to do well academically, that they embrace that challenge. But they also want to be the best darn tennis players they can be. We want to compete for a national championship. We want to win a national championship. But we want to get not the best players, but the right players to fit with us at Harvard. And that includes the character issue. And so we do a lot of homework when we do that, because we're going to live with them for 4 years. And they're going to live with us, so we try to see if they like us as coaches too. Yes? There are different ways that people are doing it. One is the universal tennis. I'm hearing from recruiting services all over the world where they're sending me information and they're showing me a person's UTR right away. That helps me really understand right away, should I encourage that person to look for a less competitive program, or should I book a plane ride to go visit them and offer them a car? No, we don't offer them a car. We give them Uber credits these days. This is a little credit card. It's a lot easier than having a car. So there's not one way to do it. There are some recruiting services that help you find the right program. But really, with some initiative, you can find virtually everything about a program online doing some research. Universal will give you college search filters that you'll be able to search exactly by your level. See the range of players on their team from the lowest starter to the highest starter. It's really helpful. Yes? What else? Yes, sorry. Sure. Great question. Life is, it's pretty fascinating. I've been there, I'm starting the 41st year, and I continue to learn things about Harvard that amaze me. I think that's why people come, the energy there of people really preparing to do something of significance, using those tools to become better leaders. It's a great energy. And so athletics, we have 42 varsity sports. That's the most of any college in the country, because Harvard believes that sports are one of the ways that you build character. You build, and most importantly, you learn how to fail. companies love to hire athletes because they know how to fail. They don't start crying when they fail. They've already failed a million times. So it's how they handle it. So my team is, I have two players. Well, I graduated one player who was from Hong Kong. I have one player left from Hong Kong. I have a sophomore who's from England. We have a four players from California, one from Florida, three from Texas. We have a young man, we have a player coming in from North Carolina next year, player from Atlanta, Georgia, and a player from Brazil. So Harvard is an international community, so the financial aid is open to everybody. Gender diversity is
women, men.
Well, we have a women's team and a men's team. We don't compete together. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
What does a scholarship include?
It will depend on if it's a Division I level scholarship. It pretty much includes everything. You even get extra money for all the time you're training. It's sensational. It's an amazing system. I'm not sure how long we can keep it going, but it's awfully good now. So, and each college will be different, and it will depend. On the women's side, they award scholarships. You get a full scholarship. On the men's side, you may be offered a third scholarship, 50% scholarship, because a college coach has to spread that around with a men's team in order to have 7 or 8 competitive players. So they probably won't be offering too many full scholarships right away. And then players earn their way into it. You guys are great. I'm happy to stick here, ask if you have questions that you don't want to ask in front of everybody else. Welcome to come up and talk. But thank you very much for your time. It's been great to have you all here.